Hello, and welcome to the Honest Hour podcast. I am Christina Mazurek, your host, and I believe that to be honest is to try to convince someone of your discovered truth of something. Your honesty is your work, your story, your relationships, and your worldview. The Honest Hour podcast is a collective voice of global influences. It is through honest conversations out loud that we can rise together through a more diverse understanding of the world. This is your honesty. Enjoy today's episode. Hey guys and girls, welcome back to the Honest Hour podcast. It's been a really long time. I started recording my last podcast just before my almost four-month-old Bubba was born. And funny enough, I stopped that recording because I didn't feel like myself. Something seemed off. And sure enough, my baby was born the next day. But that is the nutshell version. And the long story is for another day. Today, I introduce you to our newest guest, Purdy from Purdy's Coaching. She's amazing. She's an intuitive eating coach, a mindset coach. She's worked on the yachts. She's worked with people on diets. And her core purpose is helping people overcome the people-pleasing, seeking approval, asking for permission, feeling anxious personality types. I can certainly relate to the people that Purdy helps, and I'm sure many of you can as well. She was chock full of advice and amazing nuggets of wisdom in this conversation, and it was a really, really great chat to come back to the podcast with. So I hope you enjoy it as much as I enjoyed having the conversation. And as always, if you like it, please subscribe, leave a review, share the podcast, put it on social, tag us, give us your feedback. I always appreciate it when our guests and our listeners get involved and spread the word. Thank you so much, all. Enjoy. Bye. Hi, Purdy. As you know, we are now in the chat room, and I wanted to just be completely ourselves and authentic on the air for everyone to hear because this is the Honest Hour podcast. So to our guests listening now, Purdy and I were just having our chit chat before we start recording this conversation. And she said, I'm feeling a bit nervous. And I said, on that note, I'm going to record. So I'm sorry to throw you under the bus, Purdy, but I wanted to say that I also feel nervous. And I think you can also speak to this from the perspective of a coach, but I feel like when we acknowledge our emotions, we take away the power that they have and they almost dissipate. And it is so natural to be nervous when we are recording on air for the world to hear, don't you think?
I totally, totally agree. I feel like so much of society thinks of like negative emotions as something to fix. So like nervousness, anxiety, things like that. But I am a total believer that they're just something to experience. And they're absolutely normal.
100%. I definitely want to hear more about that. I'm completely honest about this with everyone I talk to, but I go to therapy and I have been going for about 7 years now, and it's the best thing ever. It's an ongoing process. One thing that we've discussed in therapy is how we need to allow the negative emotions to come up for us and rather acknowledge and accept that they're there and learn how to process them, understand the root cause, and then work on ourselves. But I feel like there's been this like happiness complex dilemma that we've had in recent years, maybe since the boom of positive psychology, which nothing against it because I love it. But for some reason, we've condemned the feeling of feeling sad or anxious or even just blue. But that's just a part of being human.
It is an absolute part of being human. Do you know, and I always tell my clients that I actually think all of the negative emotions that you have is probably one of the most important things that you can experience in life. Imagine if you had no negative emotions, none of your positive emotions would feel as good. And it's like only when we can be in the sadness and go through the darkness and the shadow and the shade of ourselves that it gives all of our happiness, our joy, our light so much more weight, because there is a juxtaposition. If you had no sadness, you would have no happiness. We would just be like in a world of gray. And who really wants that?
No, I hear you. So, Purdy, on that note, Can you give us an intro? Tell us a little bit about who you are, what you're doing, and most importantly, what we always discuss on this podcast is your why.
I feel like this is, yeah, I was like thrown into the deep water. So hi, my name is Purdy Robertson. I am a human being. it's such a strange thing to say, but it has a weird backstory. So I'll get into it later, I'm sure. I was a private chef and I used to travel around the Mediterranean cooking for private families for about 7 years. And I can't remember what country I was in or even what language they were speaking, but I had to go somewhere to like a municipal building and like get a passport stamped, and it was all quite stressful. No one could speak English. There was like queues, but not queues. And I eventually got to the front of the line and this woman was speaking to me. I think it was in Spanish. And I got so panicked. I had no idea what she was saying. So she turned around in English, very brokenly. She screamed, "Who are you?" And I think she was probably trying to say like, "What do you want?" I got so freaked out. My only reply was, "I'm a human." And the whole office kind of like stopped and they looked at me. And they all just burst out laughing. I'm like, that's probably the worst human answer that you can ever give.
But isn't now, whenever so real? I mean, I'm sorry, I have to interject here. That is so funny that you said that under all of the pressure and the eyes and the ears and the nervousness, that was your natural immediate response. Because one time I was in South Africa for the first time in I was very early days in South Africa. And for everyone listening, I'm obviously American. I was driving with my South African sister-in-law in the car. She's driving. I didn't know how to drive yet. And she gets to the robot, which Americans don't call it a robot, but she gets to the robot and the robot turns green and she says, "Oh, I don't know. I don't know which way to go." And she's sort of stuck. And my immediate response was, "Just follow your heart." She just had to pull over and burst out laughing. And it's something we say to each other to this day. And that was about 15 years ago. But I mean, amazing. Isn't that the absolute truth? Who are you? Yeah. I'm a human. Where do I go? Follow your heart. If our souls were to speak to each other, that would be what they would say.
And it's so funny, like in moments of panic, these like little nuggets of wisdom just kind of pop out. But now whenever someone asks me who I am, I think of that moment and my immediate response wants to be like, "I'm a human." And everyone's like, "Okay, that's not what we're asking, but I'm a human."
That's the truth. So besides being a human and having studied, worked in culinary, you studied culinary arts and then you worked on the yachts, feeding the fancy people. What else is there to the story?
So I am now currently a intuitive eating and a mindset coach. So I took all of my experience that I learned being a professionally trained chef. So I did that for 3 years. And then I went and worked for about 7 years as a private chef for other people. And I took all of my knowledge and all of my wanderings. And it led me to coaching, which completely revolutionized the way I think about myself, about food, about my mindset, about health. And I decided to start my own business from it. And what am I? Oh, I'm also a podcaster.
Yes.
I am actually an artist as well. And randomly enough, I collect antique teacups and I use them every day. If you're going to have tea, it needs to be done in class, ladies. Just
that is true. Well, I love all the details that you're adding. And I have to say, I recently listened to a few of your episodes on your podcast with your friend, the Project Friend podcast, if I'm not mistaken. No, I love it. And one of the episodes I listened to recently was the one about labels and how, and also the extroverts and the introvert one, which was sort of like going off of that podcast and how we give ourselves labels. So when you were saying I'm a coach and I'm a podcast, I was like making me think about labels. And it's very difficult to, when someone says, who are you? What do you do? We're going to use language and we're going to use words, terminology, phrases that will inevitably limit us in the other person's mind. So that's why I love how you said I'm a human. Because
yeah, I know.
I'm complex, I'm fluid, I'm gray, I'm so many things. Which one do you want me to tell you about?
I love the teacup one. I mean, I always lead with that. Just be like, I'm a human and I like teacups. That's me. Hi.
Brilliant. And tell me, so how did you go from working in chefing on the boats to becoming an intuitive eating coach?
So I love the story. Okay, so as a private chef, I was responsible for all things food and all things health. So I did all the grocery shopping, cooking. Like if people came and they had special diets that they were given to them by nutritionists, I had to like decode these scripts of like, I don't know, information. So I was like the main person who's responsible for all of the health on board, only not only for the guests, but also for my coworkers. And I met more people on diets than I think I actually met people. Like some people were on three or four diets. I've met like fad diets, made up diets, people just making up their own nonsense, people coming with like, oh, I found this diet on Google. I'm like, oh my gosh, okay. But one thing always struck me. So I think most people think like it's really hard to stick to a diet because it's a lot of work. You know, you have to cook, you have to recipe plan, you have to macro count, calorie count, whatever you're into. And they think that's the reason why they're not sticking to it because it's a lot of hard work. But I was doing all of the hard work, literally 16-hour days sometimes, making the food for these people to eat what they wanted on their diet. I'm using air quotes. If you can't, I know you can't see me, but I love my little air quotes diet
I can
bunny
sense
ears.
them. I sense them. The
Sense
diet
air
quote.
quotes in my noise. But not a single person I cooked for, and I did this for 7 years, could stick to a diet. So they would come with their like lettuce and their quinoa and their chia seed water, and I would do all of the heavy work, so there was no effort on their part. And then I would go to bed and I'd wake up in the morning to find that somebody in the middle of the night had raided my fridge and eaten like
Is
two
this your
packets of
personal
cheese.
fridge, or is it like the fridge on the
Well,
yacht?
so the fridge on the yacht. So I lived on board. So I lived in my workplace with my coworkers, which is just another stress level altogether. If you imagine you have to live with your boss and like have breakfast and dinner with them every day for 8 months, it's very stressful. But I would
Did
wake
that
up
lead
and
into
then
the mindset management aspect of your coaching?
it did actually. It led me to a lot of questions about myself because I think I was previously, I was very like anxious, very shy, very nervous, very I'm not good enough, people pleasing, perfectionist who couldn't say no and scared of confrontation. So I started initially with the intuitive eating. So I would wake up and no one could stick to diet. They had eaten all my chocolate cakes, they'd eaten like 6 loaves of bread. I mean, some days it was ridiculous. And now we're in the middle of the ocean. And I have to go and tell them, I'm sorry, we don't have any bread for breakfast because somebody, air quotes, bunny ears
Binge ate it
again,
all.
binge ate it all in the night. And that just
Shame.
got me thinking, like, if I'm doing all the hard work and they still can't stick to a diet, then there
It's
is
not
another problem
sustainable.
here. No, there's another reason why this is not working. And that kind of question led me to coaching, which completely revolutionized the way that I think about like destructive eating habits, so binge eating, emotional eating, stress eating. And after I learned all of this, I was like, I can't do this anymore. I can't just be the person who perpetuates this problem when so little people actually know what the problem is at and that it can actually be overcome. And then I found coaching and I was just like, that's it. My mind has changed. I'm going to do something else.
Okay, tell me, I understand a little bit about this, and I've had previous guests come on and talk about this philosophy around eating. But for the people listening today, and also for myself, because I don't know it entirely, what is intuitive eating?
Oh, okay. This is a really good question because I think if you're interested in health and wellness and you are on social media or TikTok, you will see it everywhere. People go on and on and on about it. The concept behind it is that you listen to your body and what your body needs. And a lot of people stop at the idea of you eat when you're hungry and you stop eating when you're full. But that kind of concept that they call it the fullness hunger diet. So if you ate pizza
Oh,
only
it's a
when you're
diet?
hungry, it's not really a diet, it's more of like a concept.
Okay.
It's not only about eating when you're hungry and eating when you're full, because you could only eat pizza when you're hungry and stop eating pizza when you're full. That idea is not going to necessarily mean that you're being healthy. So intuitive eating is like about learning how to get in tune with your body, because past all your sugar cravings and your carb cravings and what you've learned about food, your body has an innate wisdom that it will know what it wants. And the biggest question that people have when they start intuitive eating is like, well, won't I only eat sugar all of the time? Like, won't I only eat burgers and pizzas? Is that not only what I want? And when you delve into it, like, we have been taught not to trust our bodies because traditional diets tell you when to eat, what to eat, and how much to eat. And if you've lived in that framework, you have no idea what your body wants. And it's about developing like a mind-body awareness. It's about getting over your like preconceived notions about good food and bad food, so food labels. It's about learning how to be more like regulate your emotions so you don't want to eat the minute you're stressed or sad or lonely. I mean, we've all seen those like movies. Bridget Jones comes to mind, where the woman's crying and she's eating a bucket of ice cream on the couch because Mr. Darcy or somebody's broken up with her, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
It's almost become like so culturally normal that we are using food as a comforter and avoidance for all of our emotions. So the concept of intuitive eating goes beyond just eating when you're hungry and eating, stopping eating when you're full. It's like an entire mindset shift. And that's how I link like mindset coaching and intuitive eating coaching kind of together around how you think about yourself, how you label yourself, your values, your self-worth, and what you eat. It's got more to do with life and actually less to do with food, funny enough.
Absolutely. I mean, if you work on the root of maybe why, let's take, for example, your what would you call them, passengers on the yacht, the people that you were cooking for, then, I mean, you did all the heavy lifting, you did all of the work, the thinking, the preparation, and, you know, gave them these meals that were perfectly macrobiotically balanced and acceptable to what their eating plan was, and they just have to eat it. I mean, how easy. And then at night, they just sort of would give in and binge eat. Would you work with people today like that and help them identify now the root of why they would resort to food to sort of alleviate or appease these negative emotions?
Yeah. So that's basically what my coaching mostly centers around, is dealing with the under reason, the why of the reasons why they go towards food as a comforter and avoider. I mean, if you think about emotional eating, you eat when you're sad, you eat when you're stressed, you eat when you're lonely, when you're anxious. And suddenly you think, okay, I'm overeating and I'm having negative effects from overeating. My quickest solution that society tells us is go on a restrictive diet. You're not going to cure loneliness or anxiousness by eating lettuce. So the emotional eating or the binge eating, the stress eating, overeating, mindless eating are symptoms of other problems in your life. They are not the problems. And when we try to address the problem without understanding the cause, you will never be able to understand why you are going towards food to be your comforter. Absolutely. And that's what I delve into. And it's so interesting because it touches on how you think about yourself, how you identify yourself, the vernacular, the words you use to describe yourself. It touches on your limiting beliefs, your self-values, almost everything about yourself we get into. And it's what I just absolutely love, because people come to me going, I want to just gain control over my emotional eating. And then we end up in a place where we're talking about how they feel like they're not good enough, and how that affects almost everything about them.
Absolutely. So it's their sense of worthiness and their sense of self, essentially. But also, it comes down to what we started this whole conversation with, that we want to suppress negative emotions. So if you're trying to comfort eat, you're trying to, I mean, literally the science of binge eating, right, is that you're producing a lot of serotonin in your brain suddenly. So it's going to make you feel better. Is that right? I mean, and that sort of becomes the cycle, right? Like, you feel bad and then you want to feel good. So instead of trying to understand why you feel bad, because that's not what society teaches us. Society teaches us, take antidepressant, go drink too much, go gossip, go eat too much food, go do the thing, eat a chocolate cake, go do the thing that will immediately make this negative feeling go away. But it only makes the negative feeling bigger and bigger and bigger. It just temporarily makes it invisible.
You're absolutely right, because you're trying to treat a symptom. You're not necessarily trying to treat the cause of the symptom.
And as absolutely, I mean, so what you, what it, I'm understanding that you work with your clients on, it's very similar to what I've worked on in therapy. And I know that under your, and I'll give your introduction later, is that you also are qualified in CBT, which for the listeners is cognitive behavioral therapy. So are you a therapist as well? Hello, lovely listeners. I hope you don't mind this short break from this episode. I just wanted to pop in briefly to say thank you so much for taking the time to listen today. Your time and support is so appreciated by myself and my guests. If you enjoy this episode and others, please subscribe to the podcast and share with your friends. If you have some extra time, give us a review on your listening app or tag us in a shout out on Instagram. Our handle is The Honest Hour Podcast. Thanks again so much and enjoy the rest of this episode.
I've done a bunch of different helping modalities. I've done NLP. I've done cognitive behavioral therapy. Neuro-linguistic programming.
Neuro-linguistic programming is what I've heard. I've like met people that have studied that before, and they were professional speakers. So I've never really understood what exactly it is.
It's one of the most like fascinating things. Like what I took up from it. So obviously I've studied multiple different things, and I've done like two or three health coaching and life certificates and stuff. But what I took mostly from that is the way that we speak about ourselves kind of like creates who we are. So the language and the words that we use. And this is where like the mindset coaching comes in, because I know you listen to the Labels podcast and how you describe and think about yourself is kind of like who you become. Because if I think, and you can link this to food in the sense, like if I think that I am not good enough, and if I'm not worthy, then that is who I think I am in my mind. So my actions then portray that. So if I think I'm an introvert and I think that I'm shy, how I interact with the world and with people around me will be like a shy person, like an introvert. So how we think about ourselves and speak about ourselves, and I say speak as in like talking to ourselves in our mind, dictates who we are as people. And I think people need to realize that, because sometimes when you're on a diet, air quote bunny ears, and you start to see results and you're like, oh, I'm looking good, I'm looking fine, I'm starting to see the results that I want. Suddenly the results you are getting are now not in alignment with what you believe about yourself. So if I...
Oh, yes. Oh my gosh, a penny just dropped for me right there.
So if I don't believe that I'm good enough, suddenly if I'm losing weight, looking good, looking fine, that is in direct conflict with what I ultimately believe about myself. So you will self-sabotage. So your beliefs and your actions are in alignment.
So if we want to change what we see on the outside, if we're only looking at body image and our diet alone, you need to change your opinion of yourself. You need to work on your mindset. There's no other quick fix way around it. I mean, this is what we see. I don't know if you're familiar with this show in America. It's called The Biggest Loser.
I'm not 100% sure. If you describe it to me, I might have seen it.
Okay, so this is fascinating because it speaks to exactly what you're saying here. So it's a show that takes on a bunch of participants. These are majorly obese, overweight people. And they come onto the show and they go under the supervision of Jillian Michaels, I think was the main trainer on the show. And that's sort of her claim to fame. I'm not sure. Okay. Maybe this is too American for my South African audience. But the whole premise of the show is that you have really overweight people that come onto the show, and then you have a nutritionist and a trainer basically demand their entire day for like however many weeks, and they have a major transformation on the outside. And but okay. The whole premise of the show is to inspire people that if you work really hard, you watch what you eat, you can change. And it shows these people's emotional journey of like crying through the workouts and I don't want to do it. And they push them and push them. And what we've seen off the show is some of these participants have gone on to talk shows later, like Oprah or whatever, and they've shared their story and they've gained all the weight back and more years later. I mean, that's not a part of the show, but this is just what we saw in the public space on other platforms later on. And it's speaking to exactly what you're saying. If you are incredibly overweight and you have a problem with comfort eating and binge eating, it doesn't matter that you might change the recipe, that you suddenly start forcing yourself to eat differently or forcing yourself to exercise. At the end of that 6 weeks or 8 weeks, if you haven't done the inner work that was causing those negative symptoms in the first place, you're going to go back. Your body is going to continue to want to be in line with what your mind is telling you about yourself.
I absolutely agree with you, because one thing that I love to do with my clients is all the work that we do. So everything, be it food or mindset coaching, we underpin with habit change. So how you eat and how you think. So your thinking style actually is habitual. It's a habit. So if you go and you do all of these little, say you're on a bunny ears diet for 6 weeks and you stick to the plan, you lose weight, you get off the diet, you will go back to how you have always eaten, because that's a habit for you. And scientists think like anything between 40 and 90% of like almost everything we do, the way you talk with your hands, the way you drive your car, how you put on your makeup is a habit. And how you have to break those habits or create new habits if you want to see lasting change in any area of your life. So be this your health or your mindset or anything, needs to be underpinned with habit change, because the minute that you stop doing something, you will go back to how you have always been if you haven't done the inner work or created new habits that will last.
That's fascinating. Have you heard of the book? I don't remember the name of the book, but it's by Charles Duhigg, and it's called The Power of Habits, I think. It was amazing, and it speaks to what you're saying as well. And then there's a new buzzy, trendy book going around, which sort of says the same thing as his book, and it's James Clear, Atomic Habits.
Atomic Habits. Love it.
Yes. I've got it on my shelf. I started reading it, and then I was like, I've read this book before. I mean, it just sort of is all of this amazing information that repeats itself through other people's narrative. But I think it's fantastic, and that more and more people need to understand that we are essentially an accumulation of our habits. We are what we repeatedly do.
We are. And it's actually, if you think about it, like in a scientific sense, the fact that we have habits is so incredible, because it frees up so much of our mind for other tasks. Like, remember, if you've ever tried something for the very, very first time, like you have to pay 100% attention to what you're doing in order to do it. Yes. Once you've done it 100 times, you can like not even pay attention. And the fact that our mind, second nature. The fact that we're so second nature, everything like toothpaste on a toothbrush, coffee, how we brush our hair, frees up our mind to think about other things. But when those actions that you're not thinking about are detrimental to you, then you need to make conscious decisions to change and conscious decisions to do new things. And anything that you're trying to achieve in life needs to be underpinned by healthy habit growth.
And the exerted effort for the habit change needs to be attached to a new mindset. And this is what I've worked on in therapy so much, and we've done cognitive behavioral therapy. And now that I understand more what it is, also neuro-linguistic programming, that the way we speak about ourselves and to ourselves will really determine how we think of ourselves, which determines our actions, our habits, essentially, which is your life. But I wanted to understand, like, can you walk us through what the process looks like when you get on a new client that you're going to coach? Obviously, I know there's confidentiality, you can't name any names, but can you give us an example of a transformational story and what that person went through from when they first came to you at their conception to the person they turned out afterwards, how they saw themselves totally differently and they live a different life and how it feels organic and natural now?
So funny enough, people come to me with like the strangest complaints, like emotional eating. And then they walk
Right.
away having actually start and built a side hustle that they've always wanted to have, but never had the confidence to have. So I have so much of these like random stories that come to me for one thing, and then we go through this like mind melt. And then at the end, they just have something that they've always wanted to have, but never really had the confidence to have. I had this one client who was, he came to me because he kept didn't know who he was, and he kept questioning himself. I don't know who I am. I don't know who I am. He didn't know why he said things or did things or felt certain ways, and he was very consumed with this idea that he didn't know who he was. And through all of our work together, and I work through people with identity, so a lot of that label podcast you listen to actually comes, a lot of the stuff that comes from our podcast actually comes from a lot of our coaching sessions, actually. And through all of like going through his limiting beliefs and values and all these sort of things, we came to the conclusion or the idea that he was really, really scared to start his business. And he was attributing it to being lazy. Like, I'm just lazy. I don't want to start this business. And when we delved deeper into it was so much deeper than the fact that he just thought that he was being lazy. He had this idea of the world. He was like this happy-go-lucky guy that, to be honest, like you would look at him and things just fall into place. He's like one of those people who just meet people, things work out. This like amazing guy who just has so much luck. I say luck, air quotes, because I don't necessarily believe in luck. But he used to think of this concept of like the flow of the universe. Like there was this flow and things worked and everything was had a meaning and everything had a purpose. And in his mind, if he started this business that he wanted to start and it didn't work, then it would mean that the flow of the universe was wrong. And the fear of starting a business and failing wasn't just, I'm going to fail, or the fear of failure. It was the fact that if he failed, his entire concept of how he thought about life, the flow of everything, would be wrong. So he couldn't make a decision to start this business because he was so afraid of his entire fundamental understanding of what he thought the flow of life should be wouldn't work. And once we had worked through all of that, he actually started his business in Corona times. And he is more successful now than he's ever been. He messaged me the other day and said he's got more clients than he's actually can take, and he's booked out a year in advance. But
That's incredible.
none of that is a testament to me. That's a testament to him and his skill. But the fact that he was able to look at why he was afraid of starting something that was going to be successful was where the work started. And I've actually, for some
Could I
reason,
just
I'm not
pause right there?
sure.
Was he afraid to start that because he had a fear of the possibility of failing?
It was a massive possibility of failing, but it was what failing meant about him. And more importantly, what failing meant about his understanding of life, the flow of the universe. So most people in life have a fear of failure and a fear of rejection. And they think that the fear of failure or fear of rejection is the main fear. And I totally disagree with that. And I will ask anyone who's listening to this to ask themselves this question. What does failing mean about you?
So, is that question, if you fail, what does that mean about you?
Yes. So if you have a fear of failure, what would failing mean about you? And most
You're
people
not
would come up,
loved or you're rejected.
you're not good enough, you're not loved, you're not wanted. And the answer to that question is most oftentimes a limiting belief. But the answer to that question is the real fear. The fear of failing is sort of the symptom of that fear, the big fear, if you can answer that question honestly and introspectively, because I've asked it. I mean, I ask random people this question all the time. It's like one of my favorite questions. And some people really struggle to answer it, and some people can answer it straight away. But if you can answer it, that is sort of the core fear that it stands on. And there's this concept called a limiting belief, which is a belief that you have about yourself, so a negative belief. And it underpins most of your problems. I say air quotes, problems in life. It'll be the reason why you're scared of failing, you're scared of rejection, you're a people pleaser, you're a perfectionist, that's the reason why you can't say no. If there is one thing that all of your struggles or life nonsense, should we call it, stands on top. And when you can figure that out, you can start to change that, everything for you will start to shift.
So that's so incredible. The whole time that you're talking, and you, especially when you start using the word shift, it makes me think of a YouTube sort of movie I watched at the very beginning of my self-help and self-discovery journey in my adult life. And it's by Wayne Dyer, and it's called The Shift. And one of the things that he speaks about in his books and in all of his talks, he's passed away now, is if you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. And I didn't realize when I first learned that quote and started practicing a lot of his advice and principles in my life that all of that was mindset management.
It's
absolutely the truth. Like you say, if you can try to figure out what your limiting beliefs are and why you have them and what you're so afraid of when you don't want to start something or try something new or meet the new person or put yourself out there, what is it that you're attaching to your sense of self-worth that you need to let go of? And for so many of us, I don't know if this is what you experience with your clients, but it's what I've experienced in therapy, is that it's attached, it's rooted in our childhood, that it comes from shame. Our parents, they all tried really hard. And I mean, I'm a mom to three boys and I know that I'm going to mess things up and they're going to have to go to therapy for something like I did too. And that's fine. We'll have to just go through the cycle because I'm a human, as you say.
Yeah, I'm a human. Yes. I think so many people look at our parents or their parents like they are not human, that they should know all the answers, they should have all of this figured out, they should be above all of their struggles. And I'm like, no, they are a hot mess, flawed, just like you. They are just human.
Absolutely. And one of the lessons I've learned in parenting, and I have to learn so many and relearn them over and over again, is that one of the biggest realizations I had as an adult healing from my own childhood wounds was that I didn't know until I was an adult that my parents were also just humans on a journey, just like me. And they could only parent me and teach me and raise me from their own understanding. And often they were doing it from their own wounds. But what I could do differently is I'm going to still make the same mistakes. But where I can be different, the power I do have, the control I do have, is that I can be honest with my awareness of that in front of my kids when I'm raising them. I can make them aware that I am your mom and I'm going to do my best, but I'm not a perfect human. I don't have all of the answers. This, like when I, you know, give this boundary or this consequence or put this rule in place in our home, I'm doing it because the intention is this. And these are our family values. And when you get older, your values might change. And I encourage you to understand what your values are and to pursue them and build your own sense of self outside of me. But for the meantime, I'm going to co-parent you. And this is how we're going to do it. And I just feel like if I'm honest and out loud about these imperfections and the me doing my best, that it gives them permission to do the same in their own life, that we're less hard on ourselves.
I totally agree. And I can tell by the way that you speak that you are doing an incredible, incredible job. I think almost all mothers are doing an incredible job in the struggle that it is. But I think that you are raising three going to be very, very, very strong boys.
Well, I hope so. I just, if I could give them any gift, it would be the gift of honesty and self-awareness, that they can allow negative emotions to come up for them and not, like, I would have done the worst job in the world if my kids ever grew up thinking that they had to be quiet about a negative emotion. Because my whole message is that it's okay to feel jealous. It's okay to feel sad. It's okay to feel angry. Let's allow space and room for all of those emotions, but let's spend a little bit of time to try to understand why they're there and identify how we would like to feel and find the healthiest, most sustainable path possible to achieve that. And that's awareness, in my opinion. And it's not the easiest road. It's hard. It takes time.
No, it is hard. And I think that's what one misconception I think a lot of people have is when you start to go on a journey like this with a therapist, with a coach, or even by yourself, it is difficult. And it has to be very much intentional before it can become intuitive.
Mm, absolutely. Intentional. That needs to be a quote. You should write that down. This is some good content. It needs to become intentional before it becomes intuitive. And that's so funny because every day when I'm – well, not every day, 70% of the time, I write down my intentions at the beginning of the day. Or if I don't write them down, I go over them. I, you know, have a conversation with myself in my head and I become aware of my intentions for the day. And even before going into social settings, I mean, you and I were talking about at the beginning of this podcast how we actually felt quite nervous. And I think when we do that, we can revert to old habits and old patterns quite quickly. And one of the things I always do is I actually start becoming, I don't know, I act like I'm funny or comedic, or I even almost come across like a bitchy person. And it's just because I'm nervous and I don't know how to act. So what I've learned to do is like practice that awareness. Like I went to a new social situation a week ago. It was someone's baby shower. And I knew maybe two people there and a few of them I'd heard of, but I didn't know them well. And I felt self-conscious and insecure. And I'm like, I am a grown woman. Why am I feeling like this going? And then I'm like, you know what? I'm going to become aware. All emotions are okay. But what are my intentions going into this today? I think I'm feeling nervous because deep down, I automatically subconsciously, I'm nervous because I want to be well received. I want to be liked. Again, I'm attaching my worthiness and my value to these new people's perception of me. But if I go into this space with the intention of, I want to get to know the, you know, baby mama a little bit better. I want to remember three new people's names. I want to learn something new from someone at that baby shower today. Then it becomes this amazing opportunity of just learning something or this, you know, I'm not attaching that experience to my worthiness. Rather, I'm going in there with an open mind and what happens, happens. I don't have to cover up.
Yeah, that is such an incredible way to look at it. I also think that a lot of people think like the minute a negative emotion comes up, it's either one, an indication that there is something wrong, and two, the most important one, that it's an indication that there's something wrong with me. So a lot of people, I think you have anxiety and maybe have taken medication for it, or if this has been a lifelong problem or social anxiety, the minute they feel like, oh, I'm feeling the feels, I'm feeling it physiologically in my body, that means that there is something wrong with me. And the fact that you went into that baby shower party and you didn't assign the feeling onto it, onto your self-worth, is incredible steps towards
it's
overcoming
something
like that.
It's still intentional. It's not intuitive.
But that's different.
Definitely not. Like, and that's how I've worked through anxiety is it's like I've learned these blueprints and these maps on how to navigate these uncomfortable emotions, I'll rather put it that way. But it's not that they don't come up or that they're not there or that life is just easy. I mean, I don't need anti-anxiety medication where I have in certain seasons of my life in the past. But I've become like very aware, like, oh, there you are. I see you, that anxiety feeling. Why are you here? And instead of pushing it away, like I take a breath and I just recognize it almost like this is emotion like floating through my brain. I don't internalize it. I'm like, don't come bring that on and chew on that and make it a part of me. Rather just say, oh, hi, why are you here? Why am I, what is there to be nervous about really? And then I just like have that talk with myself.
So one thing that I love to teach my clients, and I think this is so beneficial for everybody, that a lot of, if I ask somebody, what comes first, a thought or an emotion? What do you think? What would you say? Just out of interest sake.
Emotion.
It's so interesting that you say that because I think about 80% of people I speak to say an emotion comes first. And I like to put it in this kind of scenario. So imagine you're walking down the street. Are you suddenly, randomly, inexplicably hit with sadness or anger or anxiety or joy? Or is it more likely that you're walking down the street and you see something, so you're triggered? That makes you think about something, which then makes you feel angry, anxious, happy, joy, whatever. I like to believe that a thought comes before an emotion. And it's so strange
It
because the
does, now
thought
that I think
is,
about it.
on a logical level, it makes sense, right? But the thought is so quick. I mean, if you've been in a sentence and you actually accidentally say the wrong word, or if you've been halfway through a sentence and you've been like, what am I even talking about? Thoughts are so like lightning fast that sometimes we don't even remember what we actually thought about. Like, what were the words? What did we hear in our mind? But the feeling, the emotion, the physiological response that you had to that thought lasts so long. So you might have walked into that baby shower, and I'm assuming, and gone, I don't know anyone here. Oh, I wonder what they think about me. Or maybe they think I'm strange. Or, oh, maybe they don't like me. And that thought makes the anxiety, and we latch on to the anxiety because it's physiological, it's a sensation, it's so easy to notice. But we forget the thought that led to that emotion. So, what I love, and I always, this is like one of the first lessons I get my clients to do, is to start recognizing your thoughts that lead to emotions. So when you have an emotion, a physiological thing, you can feel it. Ask yourself what I was thinking. So don't question why am I feeling anxious. Ask yourself what was I thinking. So just a tiny shift in how are you questioning yourself. If you can figure out what you were thinking, it will explain the emotion. But this is the kicker. The thoughts that we have are not always true.
Oh
And
gosh,
some,
yeah, we gotta let a lot of them go. They're
oh yeah,
intrusive and
they are
weird.
totally intrusive, but they are the things that are causing you to feel a certain way. And recognizing what thoughts are true and what thoughts are not true is one of the biggest things that are going to help you become more emotionally agile. Because if I walk into a room and everyone stops talking and looks at me, my mind goes, oh, I bet you they all think you're a bit strange. And then I'm like, oh, the anxiety, like, oh, pops its ugly head up and being like, hi, anxiety to the party. But if I go, do you honestly think that's true, that they think that? The answer will be no. And right there, I've nipped that whole thought cycle in the butt because I've recognized that the trigger, the thought that I had, wasn't necessarily real.
So we need to become aware of also
Of our thoughts.
those fast, the fleeting thoughts that happen. That's something that I've only been able to do in recent years as well. I think if you asked me or if you told me about this like 10 years ago, I would have said, I wouldn't even be able, I was not cognitively aware of the thoughts that were going through my head because I
Most
didn't
people
really
aren't.
understand where my thoughts began and my emotions ended.
And
And
as a
that's,
mindset coach, that's what I do. I help your mindset is the way you think, and I help
absolutely.
people manage that.
And where it affects their relationship with food as well.
Yes. So I do work, like sometimes I work independently, so just mindset coaching, so people who've got no problem with food and only want to talk about other things. And then sometimes I work with people whose other problems manifest as food problems as well. So I do two different styles of coaching.
Fascinating. And where can our guests find you today? Tell us a little bit about your business and where you are online.
So I am on Instagram and I'm really struggling to like make headways on TikTok. I'm just I'm not video inclined, should we say. But you can find me on Instagram and TikTok. I think I'm on Facebook at Purdy's Coaching. And I would absolutely love if anyone just drops a question or actually just chats to say hi, because I think you and I have this very much in common. One thing that I love about coaching so much is the fact that, like, I get to stand witness to other people's stories. And I know you, because of your podcast, I know that you can totally relate to that feeling.
Absolutely. I've actually thought so many times that in my life that I would love to be a coach and to help other people adopt the tools that I've adopted in my life to help navigate uncomfortable emotions and difficult situations and just like untangle our brain from
the spaghetti
wiring
of your mind.
Yes, the spaghetti is like the wiring we got, you know. And that you can, you know, that if you truly develop like a strong ability to manage your mindset, you can go through anything in life. And you also learn absolutely nothing is personal.
No.
Nothing is personal. It's insane.
Almost nothing is almost about you, funny enough. When you're like walking around thinking about what other people thinking about me and all of this imaginings in your mind, I think you'll realize how little other people's thoughts are actually ever on you at all.
Very much so. They're all thinking about themselves too.
Yeah.
They're all also worried. Like, why is everyone looking at me as well?
You know, like, one of my favorite sayings is like, you can't plant potatoes in a garden and expect strawberries to grow. And I think that's so much for your mind. Like, you can't plant negative self-talk and assumptions and fear-mongering and belittling and expect that you're going to have a peaceful, joyful, happy life. Like, what you plant in your mind will grow. And if you want happiness, you need to take a look at actually what you're planting, if that's not what you're getting.
Incredible. I think on that note, we can end the conversation. And I just want to tell everyone today that if you want to find Pretty Online and it went too quickly in the conversation, all of that information is going to be in the show notes on the listening platform that you're listening to today. Thank you so much, Pretty.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I've absolutely loved the opportunity to have this conversation. And I just want to tell everyone that you are worthy of the life that you want to have and that you're capable of change.
100%. That's a great message to go away with today. Have a beautiful day.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Honest Hour podcast. I hope this recording inspired you to live in your honest truth. And I encourage you, if you enjoyed the episode, to subscribe and to rate the podcast. If you would like to connect with me online, I would love to hear from you. I'm on Instagram at The Honest Hour Podcast, and my website is christinamazarek.co.za. Thank you and have a beautiful day.